Hello and welcome to the Archaeology News Weekly, the week before Christmas. And I am, of course, your host, David Connolly. This news is brought to you in partnership between Stone Pages and the British Archaeological Jobs and Resources website. All the stories have been collected from various sources, and the interview details on each story, including the source and often more information, please see the Stone Pages website at news.stonepages.com. The main headlines from around the world are as follows. We start with a campaign launched to save ancient Irish monuments. The Khazar petroglyphs are a lesser-known Californian marvel, and you'll find out why. Remarkable news as researchers in Turkey managed to germinate a 4,000-year-old seed. And a controversial theory emerges about the use of cereals in prehistoric Africa. Utilities work in the North Yorkshire Dales turns up a very strange Iron Age site. And talking of strange Iron Age sites, well, we go back in time even further and find strange submerged man-made sites off the coast of Orkney. Bronze Age burials are discovered along a new Irish road while astronomers celebrate at Stonehenge. A new French find puts the humans' entry into Europe 200,000 years earlier than previously thought. And back to the Bronze Age, 4,000-year-old flowers have been discovered in a Scottish kist burial. Now, from one cold place to another, we report on how modern humans colonised the Tibetan Plateau 21,000 years ago. And finally, we end with the mystery of the Narara Caves in Fiji. But of course, Christmas would not be Christmas without a little bit of blooper magic. I've picked three specially for you, and this first one just shows what happens to a presenter when they start to drift further and further away. Well, hello and welcome back to Archaeology News Weekly. I am very unsure about what happened last week, though I do have a feeling it has something to do with computers. Yes, God bless computers as they make our life much easier. Or perhaps not so at all. And I'm just rambling now. Yeah, I could just talk for hours about absolutely nothing at all and just not really get onto the news, but that wouldn't be news at all, would it now? So we'll just stop there and try again. And now, one of my favourites, and boy, do I make hundreds of these ones, the mispronunciation. Yes, my mouth just sometimes can't keep up with my brain. On the new study, the researchers integrate what is currently known about early maize in the southwest with genetic, paleoecological, ecological. That's one for the bloopers. And finally, another tongue twister that leads to a moment of madness. There's a black mat layer across North America which is correlated to the Younger Dryas climatic shift seen in Greenland ice cores. Now, from all of us here at the Badger Stone Pages News, from Diego, from Dave Horrocks, and of course from myself, have a lovely Christmas, and we look forward to seeing you, or at least from you listening to us, in the new year. So let's get on with the news. The Save Bremore Group launched their campaign at the Martin Brennan Conference at Newgrange in Ireland. They hope to highlight the threat of major industrial development to the North County Dublin area near Balbriggan. The idyllic landscape is under serious threat of being destroyed in order to make room for a massive $300 million deepwater port and associated infrastructure, pollution and industrial suburban sprawl that will bring. Drogheda Port Company has launched a process to have this port included under the Strategic Infrastructure Act, and if successful, they could use this act to bypass much of the current environmental and heritage protection. The Save Bremore Group is calling for an independent study of the heritage, which includes the Bremore Passage Tomb Complex, a series of several unclassified monuments in the Knocknagan townland, as well as mid-16th century New Haven Bay. The Save Bremore Group invite you to join the campaign. Additional information and updates are also available at, and here's the website, groups.yahoo.com/group/Save Bremore. That's Bremore. So I'll give you that again. That was groups.yahoo.com/group/Save Bremore. Some of the rock paintings at China Lake Naval Air Weapons Center near Death Valley have been dated back as far as 16,000 years ago. Established in the summer of 1943 in the heat of the Allied offensive in the Pacific, China Lake is the US Navy's premier weapons testing range and its largest real estate holding. The property itself comprises 1.1 million acres of Mojave Desert north of Los Angeles and west of Death Valley. The base is home to a complex of remote canyons holding the greatest concentration of ancient rock art in the Western Hemisphere, known as the Khoza petroglyphs. David Whiteley, an archaeologist and expert on prehistoric rock art and iconographic interpretation, believes the petroglyphs to be one of the most important rock art sites on Earth, and he estimates there may be as many as 100,000 images carved into the dark volcanic canyons, some as old as 12 to 16,000 years, others as recent as the mid-20th century. Everywhere you look for a mile or so down what is known as Little Petroglyph Canyon, there are images pecked and scratched into the rock faces, stylized human figures in a variety of headgear, stick figures with bows and arrows, dogs, coyotes, bear paws with extra digits, all manner of abstract geometric patterns, zigzags and circles, dots and hundreds upon hundreds of what look like bighorn sheep, some small, some larger than life-size. David Whiteley theorizes, well, based upon his research, that the petroglyphs are the work of generations of shamans or medicine men who travelled here from all over what is now the southwestern United States to hallucinate and then render their visions upon the rock. Public petroglyph tours are available through the Matarango Museum, and you'll find that at matarango.org. I better spell that one for you. It's MATURANGO.org, Matarango. The base's website also includes information about the petroglyphs and tours, but carries a number of restrictions. You'll be able to find that at their website. I recommend going to the Stone Pages to have a look at the web address there, as it would take me about 15 minutes to tell it to you. Anyway, tours are held on weekends and holidays. Visitors are responsible for finding two command-approved escorts. They have to arrange their own carpools and for filling out all the necessary paperwork. Up to three groups of 20 are allowed into the canyon each weekend day, and no children under 10 are allowed, and no pets. And also, as we continue the restrictions, only American citizens are now allowed to go on the tours. Proof of citizenship is required for participants 16 years and older. So that's one Scottish citizen who's not going to be allowed to see that. Bit of a shame there. Anyway, to Turkey now. A 4,000-year-old lentil seed found during an archaeological excavation has germinated, exciting scientists as the event might lead to invaluable data for comparisons between the organic and genetically engineered plants of today. It would be the very first seed from ancient times whose genes were never modified, say the scientists. Project leader Professor Bill Genn said that they found the seed during an excavation undertaken last year in Kütahya province in Turkey. Bill Genn said the layer in which they found the mainly carbonized seeds was determined to be from the Middle Bronze Age. An assistant professor from the same department planted one of the seeds last year, but that dried up after germinating. She then planted the present seed 3 months ago. It successfully germinated. The plant seems to be similar to the lentil, and it is pretty weak though, unlike its modern day version. Yet they hope it will produce flowers and then produce more seeds. Consumption of wild cereals amongst prehistoric hunters and gatherers appears to be far more ancient than previously thought, according to a University of Calgary archaeologist who has found the oldest example of extensive reliance on cereal and root staples in the diet of early Homo sapiens more than 100,000 years ago. Julia Mercada, holder of the Canada Research Chair in Tropical Archaeology and the University of Calgary's Department of Archaeology, recovered dozens of stone tools from a deep cave in Mozambique, showing that wild sorghum, the ancestor of this chief cereal consumed today in sub-Saharan Africa, was already in Homo sapiens' food range, along with the Africa wine palm, the false banana, pigeon peas, wild oranges and the African potato. This is the earliest direct evidence of humans using pre-domesticated cereals anywhere in the world, which broadens the timeline for the use of grass cereals by our species and is proof of an expanded and sophisticated diet much earlier than we believed. In 2007, Ricarda and colleagues from Mozambique's University of Eduardo Mondlane excavated a limestone cave near Lake Nyasa that was used intermittently by ancient foragers over the course of more than 60,000 years. Deep in the cave, they uncovered dozens of stone tools, animal bones and plant remains indicative of prehistoric diet. The discovery of several thousand starch grains on the excavated plant grinders and scrapers showed that wild sorghum was being brought to the cave and processed systematically. Most researchers think that humans in the Middle Stone Age, which began around 300,000 years ago and ended 50,000 years ago, depended on foodstuffs such as underground tubers and meat. Grains require a more complex preparation process of grinding and charring before they can be digested by humans. Ricarda says that sorghum flours could have been used to make culinary preparations such as bread. The first confirmed use of grains in the human diet comes from charred barley and wheat from Israel, which dates back to 23,000 years ago. So the latest findings could push that date back another 80,000 years. The inclusion of cereals in our diet is considered an important step in human evolution because of the technical complexity and the culinary manipulation that required to turn the grains into staples. Other scientists, however, are sceptical. Archaeologist Lynn Wadley, an honorary professor at the University of Witwatersrand in... I'll say that one again. Witwatersrand... Oh, I'll leave that one in. That's a special Christmas blooper just for you. Witwatersrand in Johannesburg, South Africa, points out that starch grains are notoriously difficult to identify, varying not only among species but also between different parts of a plant. Even if sorghum is truly present at a site, she says that there would be a reason for this presence other than eating grains. At Sibudo Cave in KwaZulu-Natal province of South Africa, her group has found that grasses similar to sorghum were used for bedding and tinder for fireplaces. Lauren Cordain, an exercise physiologist at Colorado State University in Fort Collins and an expert on the Paleolithic diet, agrees that the evidence is far too thin to support the consumption of grains as food. So, good idea, but I think a little bit more work is required there. Engineers burying power lines in the Yorkshire Dales in England have unearthed a piece of ancient history which has baffled experts. A long strip of ash and burnt material was discovered in Kingsdale near Ingleton. Arthur Batty from Ingleborough Archaeology Group said that they had the feature carbon dated, and this date comes back at 300 BCE, so Iron Age. Well, I just love features like this. I am a boffin and I am baffled as well. A unique discovery of submerged man-made structures on the seabed of Orkney could help find solutions to rising sea levels, experts have said. They said that the well-preserved stone objects near the island of Damsey are the only such examples around the UK. It's thought that the structures may date back thousands of years. Geomorphologist Sue Dawson said that the people had survived and adapted in the past, and it is this adaptation to climate change that needs to be learned from today. Geophysicist Richard Bates from the Scottish Oceans Institute commented that we have other sites on the south coast of England where there are submerged Mesoneolithic landscapes, but what is also present here are the actual structures. One of the key premises behind a lot of the study of the past is that the past is a key to the present and the future. So we can look to times when environmental changes have been much more rapid and catastrophic and then examine just how people survived. Experts agree that the seabed around Orkney may hide a wealth of man-made structures still to be found and studied. Ceramic beads dating back 3,500 years and described as being of great significance have been discovered on the route of the new N9-N10 link road in County Kildare in Ireland. The 25 ceramic beads were discovered along with the cremated remains of a human body on the route and are the only ones known of their kind from the Bronze Age in Irish archaeology. The cremated remains were discovered recently in a shallow pit adjacent to the site of a Bronze Age burial mound or barrow, which was discovered in the summer of 2007. As part of the routine process of sieving soil associated with human burials, technicians at Headland Archaeology uncovered the precious beads. They were passed to a leading expert in prehistoric ceramics, who confirmed that the beads belonged to a necklace or bracelet for which he could find no comparison. Although the fragmentary nature of the cremated bone made analysis very difficult, it was possible to determine that the individual was an adult rather than a child, and a female rather than a male. A sample of the burnt bone was sent to the Scottish University's Environmental Research Centre, where it was subjected to radiocarbon dating. This confirmed that the individual was cremated around 3,500 years ago. It would appear that the body was cremated whilst wearing the beads. A total of 87 cremation burials were identified on sections of the road investigated by Headland Archaeology, and although this particular find was one of the many cremations recovered dating to the Bronze Age along the route of the proposed new road, processing of samples taken from the burial revealed that this was by no means a normal burial. Personal adornment was important in the Bronze Age. However, it's possible that less durable materials were also used for personal adornment and simply did not survive the thousands of years in the ground or the initial funeral pyre. It's a fitting finale for the International Year of Astronomy. Astronomers and archaeologists are celebrating the 5 millennia of astronomical heritage at Stonehenge. The attractions include a free public astronomy exhibition and expert-led tours of the site and surrounding landscape. The celebration began with the opening of the From the Earth to the Universe exhibition alongside the Stonehenge Visitor Centre. This free exhibition, running from the 16th of December to the 3rd of January, except of course on Christmas Day and Boxing Day, it features a series of stunning images of objects across the universe, from stars and planets to nebula and galaxies, all made using telescopes on the ground and in space. The exhibition aims to show the public how astronomy has developed in the 400 years since Galileo first turned his telescope towards the night sky, let alone in the more than 5,000 years since the first stages of the construction of Stonehenge. Experts on prehistoric man are rethinking their dates after a find in southern French Valais that suggests our ancestors may have reached Europe 1.57 million years ago, 200,000 years earlier than we previously thought. What provoked the recount was a pile of fossilised bones and teeth uncovered 15 years ago by a local man, Jean Rouvier, in the Hérault Valley of Languedoc. In the summer of 2008, Rouvier mentioned his find to Jérôme Ivora, an archaeological researcher at France's National Centre for Scientific Research. The subsequent dig uncovered a large variety of ancient animal bones, cattle, deer, horses, and also of carnivorous animals related to cats and dogs. More importantly, however, about 10 metres down and under the basalt layer, the team found 20 or so tools, most of which bore traces of use. The surprise came when argon dating showed the site went back to 1.57 million years, substantially older than many other prehistoric sites. It's older, for example, than the Spanish site at Atapuerca, where the dates go back to a mere 1.2 million years. In comparison, the first such tools in East Africa date back 2.5 million years, while human settlements in the Transcaucasia region date back to 1.8 million years. More digs are planned for 2010 to discover more about the site, and I have to say I cannot wait to hear more. Now, continuing the Bronze Age burial theme, here we get a chance to see into the past where all the items have not disappeared. Archaeologists have discovered a bunch of meadowsweet blossoms in a Bronze Age grave at Forteviot, south of Perth. Pollen found in an earlier dig had been thought to come from honey or an alcoholic drink such as mead, but this find may finally rule out that theory. Dr. Kenneth Brophy from University of Glasgow said the flowers don't look very much, just 3 or 4 millimetres across, but these are the first proof that people in the Bronze Age were actually placing flowers in with the burials. The dark brown heads were found along with a clump of organic material, which archaeologists now say are the stems of the flowers. The bunch had been buried by the head of a high-status individual known to have been buried in the grave. Diggers also found pieces of a birch bark coffin and a bronze dagger with a gold hilt band. Dr. Brophy explained that in burials from this period we are used to finding metalwork, but to find these very human touches is something very, very rare, if not unique. It brings home to you that what you're looking at is not just a series of abstract remains, but actually these are people that you're dealing with. The finds all come from a Bronze Age grave or kist excavated by the University of Aberdeen in Glasgow. The site was marked by an avenue of oak posts and a large earthwork. More digs are planned in the area next year, when archaeologists will try and confirm if a sandstone slab found nearby was part of a stone circle. I just have to mention that I was actually lucky enough to see this find under conservation at AOC Archaeology. An absolutely amazing find that you just end up standing in front of. Time means nothing anymore. You're seeing a bunch of flowers from 4,000 years ago. There was even the fox fur hilt. The scabbard for the dagger. It was an absolutely perfect burial. Chinese scientists have found that modern humans had successfully colonized the Tibet Plateau in the late Paleolithic Age at least 21,000 years ago. The plateau, with an average altitude of above 4,000 meters, is one of the most challenging areas in the world for human settlement due to its environmental extremes, such as intense cold and low oxygen levels. Examination of the Paleolithic era stone tools excavated from the plateau years ago, the archaeologists believe human beings possibly inhabited the plateau 30,000 years ago. But with a drastic drop in temperature and the last glacial maximum of the late Paleolithic age, around about 23,000 years ago, many species could not adapt to the changes and died out. Scientists have been debating heatedly whether modern humans on the plateau had survived the adverse conditions. Researchers collected 680 genome samples of genetic structure from the Tibetans in several major populated areas. Based on studies of the mitochondrial DNA genome variation, the results confirm that the vast majority of the Tibetan matrilineal components can trace their ancestry to Epipaleolithic and Neolithic immigrants from what is now northern China, around about 10,000 years ago, which accords with previous studies. In genetic studies, mitochondrial DNA is a tool for tracking ancestry through females and has been used in this role to track the ancestry of many species back hundreds of generations. However, another significant finding was that the researchers identified an infrequent novel haplogroup, M16. M16 branched off directly from the genetic components of the ancestors of the modern Eurasians and has an ancient age of at least 21,000 years, based on calculations through various dating methods in genetics. Its nearly exclusive distribution in Tibetan populations and ancient age suggests that M16 may represent the genetic relics of the late Paleolithic inhabitants of the plateau. Archaeologists have discovered Paleolithic human hand and footprints near Lhasa at the heart of the plateau and reckon they date to about 20,600 years, a tangible link to this original group. Deep in the jungles above the village of Narara on Ra, one of the Fiji Islands, stand 12 stones of similar size and shape. The 13th stone, though, is a little longer than the rest, and they stand as monolithic reminders of an era that the people of Narara are struggling to understand today. Caves, with drawings in them, sit directly beneath. It takes about 6 hours on foot to get up to these ancient monuments at the top of a range of mountains that make up the Nakavadra range of Fiji. The stones sit in a rough circular formation on the very top of a very steep mountain. John Welevu, a researcher in ancient Fijian culture, believes that they are important for the people of this country, and the indigenous inhabitants probably chose the site for its height and panoramic view of the world, especially the eastern seaboard. The Narara cult would have been prominent in its day as the Mount of the Gods. Its seclusion, non-accessibility and panoramic view denote its role as a place where the gods bless the whole of Fiji. At the foot of the mountain would probably reside the various social groups that define the culture in terms of the cult. Visiting worshippers from Fiji would present their gifts at this point, so Narara itself would have been a very busy commercial centre, with travellers coming from all around. He believes the stones held a lot of meaning for the ancient people of Narara. The 12 stones, he feels, arranged in a circular formation, probably depict the 12 complete cycles of the full moon from one harvest to the next. Usually, upon the completion of the 12 full moons, the harvest had not been reached, probably by a week, days or hours, and the normal practice was then to add on another moon, the 13th moon. the 12 stones being a complete number, but to enable rebirth or the continuation of the circular motion, the 13th, the number of the rebirth, had to be added on. Bit woolly, but hey, that's archaeology. I do like it. In fact, I might actually write a new novel called The 13th Moon. Sounds good. Also sounding good and tapping away in the background as I'm recording this podcast, we have the latest edition of the Past Horizons magazine, which will be coming out later on in February. But if you haven't actually seen the November issue yet, then what are you playing at? Come on, get along to www.pasthorizons.com/magazine. It's an incredible free online journal of volunteer archaeology around the world. Can I also remind you that there are many new archaeological and heritage employment opportunities to be found on my own site. That's Badger, www.bajr.org. Remember also that more can be found on Stonepages, news.stonepages.com. And of course, it just goes for me to say one more time, a very happy Christmas and New Year to you all from us here at Stonepages Archaeology News. Thank you very much for listening to this edition, and I look forward to seeing you all back in 2010.